cool scientist is here, Sean Duke, to tell us about the secrets of, well, about the universe and everything.
Yeah.
And the answer being 42 and all that. It is 42, isn't it?
According to Monty Python or one of those, I can't remember.
The Hitchhiker's Guide.
Vogon poetry, etc.
Yeah, it was. So John Duke is here, and he's going to tell us about all sorts of things. And he's going to talk to us about the end of mankind. And we say M-A-N-kind because sperm cells created from female embryos. So that's it. Guys are useless, redundant. What's all this?
Yeah, we probably knew that a bit anyway, but this confirms it.
You have to be around to do the iron and the wash.
It's amazing what they're doing because they have now, with stem cells, these magical cells that can be turned into any other type of cell, they have, I suppose, crossed the final problem, the technical problem. There's still a few things to work out, but what they have done, essentially, is they've managed to take cells from a woman, from an embryo, which would develop into a woman in the normal circumstances, and they've taken these female cells, if you like, and they've turned them, reprogrammed them into a sperm cell. So that means that, for example, lesbian couples could now have, theoretically, could have their own biological children. Now, the same can hold true as well with these miracle cells, these embryonic cells, stem cells that are so flexible. Now, one cautionary tale there, I suppose, about this is that those embryonic stem cells, they're ethically tricky because in this country nobody experiments with them, for example, because they're taken from human embryos. So there is that there that's going to maybe hold this up in terms of getting out there into the clinic.
But only in Ireland?
In Europe as well, it's in a grey zone because essentially, if you or me wanted to tomorrow to set up a clinic in Bray where we're working on embryonic stem cells, it wouldn't be against the law. But nobody does it because they won't. They're not going to risk it with the lack of legislation.
Okay. You know? Yeah.
So that's the situation. But in any case, the men and women differ. One of the reasons they thought that this wouldn't be possible is because of chromosomes. What are called chromosomes? These are kind of structures. They look a little bit like if you took two pairs of legs and you put them on top of each other. We've got, men and women have got different chromosomes.
We've got a Y one,
and that makes the two of us weaker biologically. And that they reckon that's probably why men pick up a lot of these genetic diseases that women don't. Women are stronger biologically and they live longer because they've got XX. We've got the X and the Y chromosome, and a lot of the stuff that makes us vulnerable as men is carried on the Y chromosome. So they've managed to get over the fact that there is a difference in the chromosomes here, and they've done this. Now, of course, people are saying that it's going to be a while to before we see it in the clinic. And also in England, where this was done, where this initial work was done, in Britain, I should say, well, it's Britain for now anyway, they have legislation that prohibits essentially turning a cell from a woman into a man or man into a woman. So, for example, if you were having a problem as a man, getting sperm that worked for whatever reason, then the legislation in England says that you can use stem cell therapy to get your own cells, but you can't change sex with them. Okay, so at the moment it's illegal in England, and we'll just see where it goes. But like a lot of things, the science is heading way ahead of the legislation.
Okay, it's the cool scientist Sean Duke who's just been talking about sperm cells created from female embryo. So it's an all one stop shop for women for the future. Yeah, but we'll see. We want to hear about Boris the Robot. I like this guy, Boris the Robot, because the headline of what you're going to tell us about is that he can load up the dishwasher. Now, I don't think many people can load a dishwasher correctly, and I don't know if Boris is going to be able to do it, but if he can fling the stuff in, well, that's a start.
That's right. So Boris the Robot, this chap, he's been developed. Now, it's incredibly hard to do certain tasks, we should say at the start, that we consider fairly simple. Like, for example, loading a dishwasher, because you have to select the different things and where you're going to put them. You have to grab them in a certain way. You need very flexible fingers. You need need to make decisions, all of that stuff. So this is why they, at the University of Birmingham, they decided to try and develop a robot that could do a certain skill, human-like skill, because this is now the third generation of robots. We've been talking about robots in the home since the 1950s, probably, you know, that we're going to have robots doing this, that, and the other. But it's a lot more complex than we thought. We're still at pretty relatively primitive stage. We've had the basic robots that were just machines, essentially, that did basic tasks. Then we moved on. We had robots that could do simple tasks, like they could go left, right, etc., like that. Now we're getting on to the third generation, where they're trying to replicate the human. You know, get them to do what humans can do, which is a big step forward. This is the initial start here of this. So what they did was they scattered a bunch of objects in front of Boris, and they said, right, let's put them in the dishwasher. So Boris, one of the things that they have a problem with robots is they've no sensory feedback, so they don't know how to actually grasp something and get information. Like when we grasp a cup, we know that it's hard, so we get information from our fingers that tells us that we don't need to grasp it any harder, for example. So you need something like that in the robot, which is already started, that you need sensory feedback. You need software. You need a lot of things to come together. But they're saying there's actually a YouTube video, if you go and look up the BBC website, where you can see Boris and lifting cups and saucers and everything like that, that he's going to be produced in 2015. So he's going to be able to do this, and I guess, you know, we might see him loading our dishwasher and doing tasks around the house. And we've got voice recognition now, so he'll be able to listen to your voice, and you'll be able to tell him go off and do the chores, and you can sit and read the newspaper.
Right. Is that what we do when he's doing it? Very good. Sean Duke, cool scientist here. Just time for one more, and I was asking you about this. We hear about we are made up of atoms. Last week we were made up of carbon and water, but yeah, we're also made up of atoms at a more fundamental level. What's an atom?
Well, take water, right? The atoms in water. Water is a good example. It's made up of two elements. An element of H2O. We've heard of H2O, right? So that's two heliums and one oxygen, right? They're the most basic elements, if you like. There are different elements that are...
Is it hydrogen?
Hydrogen is an element. Oxygen is an element. And within those very basic elements, you have atoms. And the atoms that are in hydrogen are all the same. They're all hydrogen atoms. The atoms that are in oxygen are all the same. They're all oxygen atoms. So the atom is the smallest thing, if you like, that's indivisible. That, well, up until fairly recently, they thought you can't break this down into anything more basic than an atom. You can't see the atoms. They've philosophized since ancient Greece that they existed. You can't, if you look at a normal microscope that's used in school, like a light microscope, you can't see them even with the microscope. You can't see them with your naked eye. So we never knew they were there. We thought they might be there. We invented these new microscopes. We saw them. So now we know that we can manipulate these atoms. Nanotechnology, we're building things with atoms. We can split atoms, which of course is nuclear energy. We can... What we're trying to do, the big thing that we're trying to do now, is to bring atoms together, nuclear fusion, like what happens on the sun. If we manage to do that, they say we've got clean energy forever. That's like a holy grail of science. So atoms and the manipulation of atoms is a huge area, and I don't have time to go into it, but I mean, the most famous experiment of all, I suppose, was the splitting of the atom, where an Irishman, Ernest Walton, in 1932, built a machine that was the first proton accelerator, where he took these charged particles and he slammed them into a piece of lithium. We would have heard of lithium. It's a metal. It's used for depression now as a drug as well. He split the lithium into pieces, and that was the first time that an atom was ever split. Now, of course, we have uranium being split, which is a very heavy metal. And uranium is critical because uranium-235 in particular, it can start a nuclear chain reaction. So you mine this stuff out of the ground, you then essentially fire particles at it, you split it, and then once it splits, it can split other uranium atoms. And there's a huge nuclear chain reaction that happens, and you've got this massive release of energy.
But there's atoms, and I mean, there's protons and neurons and all these fellas.
There's charged particles. There are neutrons, which are neutral. There are protons, which are positive, and there are electrons, which are the electricity.
And these are spinning around somewhere.
The electrons spin around, And the
Where are they now in relation to us?
Okay, well, it's like, imagine like the solar system. So, you know, think of that. You've got the sun at the center and you've got all these planets spinning in orbits, okay? So the nucleus of the atom is like the sun. And then the electrons, the negatively charged things that cause electricity, they're all spinning around. But the question, a very good question, where exactly is any particular electron at any particular time? The answer is we don't know. That's the whole basis of quantum mechanics, which is, you know, this really complex area where all they can say is, based on these equations, which are very complicated, Ernest Schrodinger and people like that, they can determine the probability of an electron being in a certain place at a certain time. So they can say, like with the planets, we think that there's a 70% chance that the Earth is here in its orbit, but we're not quite sure, we can't prove it.
Okay.
So that's it. No, that's right. They're still trying to figure it out.
Yeah, we watch it. But anyway, yeah. Thanks, Sean, for that. I'm muddled up as usual. I know, that's a very good explanation. Don't forget, Stardust, that is silicone. You said last week you confirmed we are Stardust.
We are Stardust.
Aren't we?
Yeah, like the song, We Are Stardust.
Yeah. But we are made up of what's in the universe.
Absolutely, yeah. We're made up of helium and water, helium and oxygen and carbon and, you know, all of those other things that are making up the stars. We're all part of the same thing. There's nothing different about anything. It's all how you assemble the blocks together like Lego, and we're just put together in a certain way.
Sean Duke from SeanDuke.com.